For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel. I am closing out the month of July with the final episode. July on my show has been all about women of color. I am so honored to have been able to host this content. I'm so grateful for all of the incredible support and the wonderful guests along the way. We've had amazing conversations, primarily about Necra, but over on this channel, all sorts of different obscure characters. And we get to close out the month with a character I am thrilled to be covering, who is a bling, who, you know, there's an exclamation point, so you have to emphasize it. It's bling every time. And I'm so honored to be joined by the incredible Tiffy Starchild, someone who I follow online for the last couple of years, I think. Tiffy, I was so grateful when I reached out and you agreed to come on the show. Welcome to Gray Malkin Lane, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you for creating this space and for this series. I am just happy to be here.
It's been so fun. You know, my show started in the Silver Age. So we started back in the early 1960s stuff, and now we're in the mid 70s. Mm. And we're getting close to the first appearance of Storm, which is in Giant Size X-Men number one. And I realized a little while back, we needed to start having some conversations about the portrayal of African-American characters in comics so that we could understand why it was so important when Storm showed up. You know, it's such a big deal. Comics are so tightly related to the era in which they are produced. And Bling is certainly one of those characters. We'll be talking about her because she comes from a particular time period.
Parents' names especially, I think, reveal so much.
But also, that's never been in a comic book. It's just a line from a profile. We'll talk about it. I'm so happy to have you here. If you will tell our guests a little about yourself, I would love to hear a little of your origin, both as a professional and as a content creator is probably the right word, and as a comics fan.
Oh, for sure. Thank you. Well, my name is Tiffy. And let me see, I'm a lifelong nerd. I've been in it since the 80s, since 85. Let me just put my whole age out there. So I think that it's really great that so much of the nerdy things that I grew up with, like I have lived long enough. Oh man, I feel like an old head saying that. I have lived long enough to see it come back around and be mainstream or be more accessible to actually have people to have these conversations with. Because before, it was me just chasing down my family members, talking about Sailor Moon and X-Men and Disney movies. And now I can create online spaces to have these conversations, or I get to meet wonderful people like you and get to have these conversations. So there is that. The nerdiness was always there. And then as far as like content creation, I think I started just the same way like a lot of people do. It was Instagram. I go to Disneyland a lot, so I was taking pictures of my food. And then at some point, I realized that people were paying attention. And then, okay, I can turn my camera on. I can talk a little bit more. Okay, I can make a living out of this. Now here I am. I talk on nerdy things. I run my mouth a lot. I started a villain PR series, which I think a lot of people know me from. It's not what I first started doing. It's not what I'm doing right now, but a lot of people came in during that villain PR era. And I'm just here grateful that I get to talk about things that I've loved since childhood and make a living doing it.
There's not only an active nerd community, there's an active blurred community out there. Absolutely. Which is wonderful. When I worked on the Marvel handbooks, I was working from home in a remote location for years, like 7 or 8 years, and I just really never interfaced with anybody. Launching this show, I have made hundreds, literally, of friends, some of them very close friends, and like but all my travel now is like going to cons to meet with people that I love from the show. Like, oh, let's hang out. It's so exciting. It's been such a delightful space in a post-COVID world to like interact with others. You have such an infectious, warm, insightful, fun energy about you. Every one of your videos leaves me smiling. When you're commenting on X-Men 97 or reviewing crazy X-Men continuity, or even just showing pictures of like the crazy things you find at the grocery store, you're so fun to watch. Created a particular persona for yourself online, and I'm thrilled that that has been such a success for you. That's wonderful.
Thank you. I will tell you though, it's not an online persona. This is me. So because I tried to be fake. I really did. I tried to be like the aesthetic it, girls, and use a soft voice. And hi, I'm Tiffy, and today we're going to have a night. No, that did not last long. My throat hurt. So I will assure you that it is no persona. Like, this is me. So.
Yeah, yeah. When I say persona, you know, this is me when I make this show too. I'm very real. I'm very open. Mm-hmm. But there's also like, there's that moment you turn the camera off and then you're just like, ah, you know, like there's a particular type of energy.
Back in. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Like, I'm me, but I'm also not on camera anymore. Me
on versus off. I feel you.
Yeah. Sure. What's your history with the X-Men?
Ooh, my first exposure to the X-Men was X-Men 92. So the cartoon. I always tell people, and I had a chance to tell Allison Seeley Smith, the voice of Storm, because I interviewed her recently. But Storm for me, because I'm a huge Disney fan. It's like Disney above all else. So growing up, you know, I didn't know words like representation and things like that. I just knew that there was no Disney princess or character that looked like me. But then there was Storm over with these mutants, and she was beautiful and strong and powerful, and she even had Disney princess hair. So that to me was just absolutely everything. That was my, I lived for Saturday mornings. All I wanted to do was see Storm. And then much later on, I got into the comics, and that was really difficult because comics and the continuity and like where, you know, just comic books are difficult if you're just dropping in. Am I on the main storyline? Is this a main book? Am I getting into the past? Is there information from another book that I need in order to move forward in this story? So it probably wasn't until the past 5 years or so that I got back into comic books with a clear direction, and this is how you read them or reference something that maybe you hadn't read. So
yeah, it's that thing where, I mean, there's 100,000 issues out there. You could pick up any one and enjoy it for what it is, but it's always going to lead you to something else, and there's no right or wrong way through it. Storm still kind of your ride and die, it seems.
Oh, I got a Storm, the tiara right over there somewhere, because I don't know when, I don't know how, cosplay her, and I just have accessories in the meantime. But
I think you and I are both going to be at San Diego, and I'm pretty confident Allison Seeley Smith is also going to be there.
Yes.
My dear friend Dylan Carter, who is another podcaster, is working with her there. Do you know Dylan?
He's with, yes, I'm not sure of Dylan's last name, but I feel like there could only be one Dylan. He works with Uncanny Experience, right?
Yeah.
I know Dylan.
Dylan's great. Are you going to the Uncanny Experience?
I am.
Ooh. Oh my God. Zoom is great. I'm thrilled you're going to the Uncanny Experience. I went last year. I got to be like a professor at the Xavier School, and I was teaching classes and facilitating. In fact, I got to host the panel for the voices of Jubilee, Wolverine, and Rogue from the original show. And it's a really special con. I've been to a lot of cons. It's my favorite I've ever been to. It's really special.
Is it as immersive as it looks? Because when I tell you I will show up, I will be in character. Tiffy will be gone, and whatever, maybe my mutant name will just be Starchild, because I'm not that creative sometimes, but I will be in character the entire weekend if that is the vibe.
Yeah, it is the vibe. You know, there's it's like a mansion. It's small, and there's only about 1,000 people there. So you kind of see the same folks. There's socials every night, and everybody's happy and smiling. And every obscure cosplay character from DJ to soft serve is there. And you know, there was a night, the first evening, I was like, there's something really magic here. And there was a Hellfire party, and then we went upstairs to the lounge, and there was a Dazzler cosplayer singing on stage at a rock concert, and I was standing in between Lenore Zan and Chris Claremont having an X-Men themed cocktail, and I'm like, this is fucking great. It's so cool.
Oh my gosh, see, yeah, you're gonna see a different side of me, because I'm not cool. I don't know how I appear in my videos. I'm not cool. I don't have a modicum of chill. I will be squealing and fangirling and being very embarrassing to myself. So
and it's just such an extraordinarily safe space. You know, people of color, queer people, trans people, disabled people, everybody just felt safe and embraced. And it's just this wonderful kind of let your freak flag fly, be a nerd, and everyone's happy to see you. We had like a big group shot outside, and there's a bunch of professional cosplayers, including a guy that was like full-size Juggernaut, just incredible. And people were driving by, like hitting the brakes, like, what the hell? Like a giant group of X-Men. It's really fun.
That might be, I'm looking forward to that the most, I think, this summer fall.
Well, I'm going to interview you more extensively when you come on the main show, which I'm happy about, but it's such a delight to meet you. Today we are here to talk about Miss Roxy Washington, or Bling herself. I give you a list of characters we could talk about. Why did you choose Bling?
I don't know. know, something about her, they were all kind of obscure to me, but I do remember reading an issue with Bling in it, and I thought her character was kind of interesting. And I hate to say it, but the Nelly Furtado song jumped in my head and was like, what about that Bling Bling? And I was like, because that's right. And I was like, yeah, let's go with Bling. Why not? The thinking behind it.
Bling is an interesting character. There's a thing we see in comics where there are obscure Black characters. We've been focusing on my main show on the 70s. Bling doesn't show up till 2005. There are often kind of, I don't know if this is the right term to use, but racial stereotypes of characters created. She's the daughter of rappers and her name is Bling and she's a Black girl and she's gay, which is cool. But it's a thing later where another writer will come on and make the Black character very, very educated. Like, we're going to make her a scientific genius, and that will take away some of the problematic racial content that's been there all along. We see this with, like, the Deadly Nightshade, who initially is, like, in a bikini talking in a baby voice, and then suddenly she's a scientific genius, you know? It's a thing we do with a lot of characters, but it's a really interesting reparative way to fix a character that started in a problematic way. Do you recall your first read of Bling?
It was the issue where she was with Jubilee and Armor, and when they were fussing with the thing for Shogo, the little protection thing. So it was a really, really small introduction to her. It wasn't much of a moment, but I remember seeing her and being like, ooh, what's this? And particularly her design, especially because I'm a big Emma Frost fan. And so I think it's interesting that we have this white woman character who has a diamond mutation, and it is smooth. It's beautiful. It's pretty. It's a big part of Emma. And I think it fits her character as far as her vanity and a whole lot of other things. And then you have Bling, who is also made of diamonds, and she does not get that pretty treatment. So, you know, quote unquote pretty. And I just thought that was interesting right off. We have this raw, natural diamond, and it was presented much differently.
And you're talking about X-Men Volume 4, which is when they tried to do the all-female team of X-Men written by male writers, and it just kind of didn't go great. It started strong and then just didn't kind of go anywhere. Bling has basically, when she's not a background character, she has basically four very brief storylines, and we'll talk about them in more detail. But she's the exasperated student who's kind of over the X-Men, but kind of has a crush on Mystique. Then she's part of the, like, 198 group, where it's the endangered species, and she has that whole thing with M-Plate, which has still been her biggest storyline to date, where she gets captured and fed upon, because, you know, he likes to eat Diamond Girls, like Penance and Bling. Then we have her brief appearance in the X-Men volume you referenced, as well as Generation X, where she's got a little bit more relationship drama. She's also developing kind of some body positivity as she works on, like, who am I as a person in this diamond form? And then on Krakoa, she has a little bit of attention in the Sabretooth series, where she's working with Necra and Oya, or the Idie Okonkwo, the new character. Her new codename is Temper in Jed McKay's book, where she builds a boat, and we don't see a lot of her. She doesn't have a lot over the years, but I think people are kind of fond of her because she is unique among the team. What is it that you love about her?
I love that she comes into it and she's just like, especially when it's the, if you want to be an X-Men, you have a little bit of a death wish, and that's not why I'm here. I love that they made her focus on her studies. She's like, I'm here for an education and to learn, and y'all are trying to go out and fight, and that's not what was in the brochure when I signed up for this. To me, that's just so real, because I came here for an education and I ain't been in class once. What's going on?
They never really show them in class. I don't remember where this reference is. You know the character Glob Herman? This might have been in Elliot Kalin's Spider-Man and the X-Men series. Maybe. Glob Herman is the guy made of wax that you can see his skeleton on the inside. And there's a scene about, like, mutant sexuality when you have, I have to look up my reference, where if you have a body that's not a typical body. And Glob Herman raises his hand and he's like, what if you don't have genitals? And the teacher's like, what should I answer that? I feel like Bling could have fit into this class. Like, she's all diamond, and I don't know how her sexuality works, but she's a very horny character despite being made of diamond. She's advertising open relationships. She's going after girls that aren't interested. She has, like, kind of a little drama moment. So there's some interesting pieces with her sexuality and her being a lesbian character that I find really interesting as well. Were you aware she was queer when we started?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I went through the very helpful document that you made. I read it through a couple times.
So yeah, I like to send notes. I mean, you can read all the stuff, but I'll do the work for you if you're going to come on my show.
Absolutely. And both of those help, having access to the comic books help, but I'm also like, ooh, give me a nice little summary. What's going on?
Sometimes people will get like, if we're covering a more robust character, I'll send like 15 pages of notes and they're like, holy shit, you want me to be comprehensive?
And read them as well. Because I love these characters. I love, and I tend to hyper focus. Like my big characters, Storm, Rogue, Emma, Monet. So when I get an excuse to dive into another one, I take it. And I listen, I'm smart, but sometimes I'm not. So I take guides and assistance when they are off.
Where were you in 2005?
You see Santa Cruz go banana slugs getting my theater degree.
The Santa Cruz banana slugs?
Yeah. And I think the whole thing was they have no natural predator. And since Santa Cruz is such a hippie town, the college sat in the woods, like we're talking rain dance is naked in the first rain, drum circles, everybody was high all the time. And we didn't have competitive sports team. I think a basketball team was our most like on campus sport thing. So very passive.
I grew up Mormon, but I was raised in rural Missouri. And as an older teen, we went to rural, like, Potato Town, Idaho, which is where I went to high school. And my high school mascot was a russet potato. I'm not joking.
Did they give him like little arms and legs? And
I will literally send you a screenshot in a minute of my high school mascot. He's ridiculous. It's so stupid. In 2005, I was just finishing grad school. It was a very different world culturally. It's crazy to think about how different things were. And this is where Bling first shows up in X-Men Volume 2, number 172. This is Peter Milligan and Salvador Larocca on the book. And they give us a couple new students that are just kind of in the background, mostly. They don't have a lot to do. One of them is a character named Flubber, who's never done anything. One is Onyx, who I think is most famous for dying during Necrotia. And the third is Rain Boy, who was recently used in Vita Ayala's New Mutants a little bit more prominently. But Bling is made of diamond. She almost looks like a rock at the start. She's sassy. She jokes around with other students a lot. And she has a crush on her teacher, Fox, who turns out to be Mystique, who's fucking Gambit, but also maybe Iceman. And she's trying to prove that Gambit is loyal or disloyal to Rogue. It's a weird story. Are you familiar with this era of the books?
I listen only briefly and only enough to be very confused by it. So that is like, okay, girl, listen.
Are you a Mystique fan?
I like Mystique. I don't know if I support Mystique, but I like her. And when I'm feeling messy, oh my God, I love you. Yes, I'm the biggest Mystique fan.
Queer icon Mystique, who recently got married or at least renewed her vows to her wife, Destiny. By the way, there is an appearance from Bling in that issue. That's her most recent. We'll talk about it. It happened after I sent you my note. So Bling is interested, and this is where you reference. She's like, I joined this school to improve myself. She sets a meeting with Gambit about dealing with the media. She's like, so would you say we've entered the second stage of the postmodern mutant era, sir? She's very frustrated with everything going on around her. Rogue's aggression, Mystique's lies, the X-Men are not what she was supposed to, they're not supposed what they purported to be. She's also not a passing character, which she's very vocal about. Like, I don't fit in, I don't have the regular body type, and I'm not sure I feel supported or understood by this school. Either perhaps, she doesn't say this, but either perhaps as a Black lesbian or as a woman made of diamond. Like, I don't know if you guys have what it takes to get there. She's around when, like, Apocalypse changes Gambit into death. M-Day happens. The Sentinels are at the school. She's at funerals. She doesn't really have a lot of attention in this opening storyline, but she's kind of unforgettable in that she doesn't look like anyone else. Mm-hmm. Do you have thoughts on this early era for her?
I think that she brings up really valid points in that the X-Men... They're a marginalized group, obviously. They're part of mutants. And we see it revisited as a theme within the comics that they're also a privileged bunch of the outcasts, of the mutants.
Yeah.
So many of them are beautiful. They're pretty. They can fire off a lightning bolt or read somebody's mind or shoot an optic blast. and then serve face for the camera because they can. And that's a big part of their appeal. So I like when a character comes along to challenge that. And they're like, hey, you're supposed to be for us. We're facing a lot of discrimination and we don't even have the luxury of hiding. If you wanted to, you could go out, you could hide amongst the people. We don't get that. And that's not being addressed yet. You want us to die for y'all. How does that work? So I'm a big fan of characters that kind of represent that, because it's a real life frustration that I think belongs in this comic book as well.
Fantastic Four number one is where we get the Thing, who a big part of his storyline is, I hate how I look, I don't fit in, I'm a monster. The original X-Men are all passing. You know, Iceman can change to ice and Thing, or excuse me, an Angel has wings, but it's not till Nightcrawler comes along that we start to see more of this, like, I'm a person who doesn't fit storyline show up. And then we get to see that more and more as time goes by. But that's an ongoing commentary, because Xavier never gave the Morlocks a place to live. There's that infamous episode of X-Men 92 where they save the Morlocks at Christmas and then, like, celebrate Christmas with them in the sewer instead of inviting them back to the mansion afterwards.
Enjoy your trash and poop. Like, okay.
And so Bling is kind of through this era without a ton of focus. And then we get a book called X-Men The 198 Files. This is during my time on the handbooks. X-Men 198.
Daddy Libido?
Was no, that? Okay. That's not me. But it's profiles of all of the known remaining mutants after M-Day. Mm-hmm. And this handbook write-up kind of gives us a background for her that we've never seen referenced. I don't know who originally wrote this. Do you want to read the entry for Bling that is written in X-Men The 198 Files?
Just from this?
Yeah.
Roxy Washington was born into hip-hop royalty as the daughter of Roy Daddy Libido Washington and Angel Sexy Mother Depressed.
The daughter of Daddy Libido and Sexy Mother.
And Sexy Mother. That. Okay.
And it's not Mother. It's M-U-T-H-A. Sexy Mother.
Having appeared in her parents' rap videos from a young age, which, what was she doing in the rap video? Like, was she just, you know, hitting a little bow wow or something? Like, I'm trying to figure out, okay. Washington was often targeted by would-be kidnappers and assassins. Destined to follow in her parents' footsteps, Washington turned her back on that life and enrolled as a student at the Xavier Institute under the tutelage of Gambit. It appears that Washington is more concerned with improving herself rather than the escalating human mutant situation. Her school record shows her to be a good and attentive student with a strong sense of responsibility. As a member of Gambit's squad, Washington was forced to deal with the arrival of newcomer Fox's infatuation with her teacher, despite being attracted to Fox herself, until Fox was revealed to be the shape-shifting missing. Weight 152, powers, abilities, bone marrow able to produce diamonds of varying quality, can expel diamond shards from her body at high velocity, enhanced durability.
And this is written in the voice of Valerie Cooper for the Office of National Emergency. So this book it's as if Valerie Cooper is writing up the files. So this white Republican woman is the one writing all these terms down.
From her elliptical.
What are your thoughts on Bling's origin, which we've literally never seen referenced on the page?
Yeah, it's funny to me. It's funny, and I actually don't have too many. It makes me laugh, but I don't think that it was supposed to make me laugh, because Daddy Libido and Sexy Mother are funny, and I don't think that they're meant to be. And it's giving very much, you didn't have, was a black person in the room? Did you talk to any Negro about this before you published this? Because they just maybe told you. But at the same time, it's kind of fun. When I think back to 2005 and just hip hop and music, like I said, I was a theater kid in the woods of Santa Cruz, but I grew up in the hood, believe it or not. And so I think creating a character that plays on fun aspects of black culture and hip hop culture and rap culture, they were fun. And the early 2000s to me, wearing the oversized dress jerseys, doing things of that, they, like, I don't know, that type of fashion and aesthetic of hip hop can be referenced in a fun way. And so I could see why someone will look at that and all the ways that we understand that black culture drives American culture and culture around the world. I can see them going, yeah, and we're going to make this character. Her name's going to be Bling. She's the daughter of a rapper and another musical star. That shit is hilarious to me. So
now this is one of those, if a person of color had written this story, I'm like, oh, that's cute. But if it's a white person, I'm like, oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. And I think if I had today's mindset, my mindset back then when this character was released, and the knowledge that it was not written by a Black person, not just a person of color, but if this is a Black character, we need to frame it, and she should have been written by a Black person, preferably a woman. So if I had understood all of this back then when the character was released, I might have more of an issue. But it's been daggum near 20 years since this character was introduced. The decision's been made. Who are we getting mad at? Marvel? Okay, I don't know. That's like, to me, getting mad at Disney for things like Song of the South or Sunflower of the Center and Centaur and Fantasia. You can look at something from the past and be like, okay, well, that's not ideal. What have they done in the meantime? What have they done since then to improve upon this character, since we are in a different time frame with 2020 vision and hindsight going, maybe that was not the best idea. So to me, it's not so much the origin or how she was first introduced. I'm not going to feel any too strongly away about it 20 years later. It's what are they doing with that character since then?
I would love to see like Stephanie Williams or Victor LaValle write Bling meeting her parents on the page. And you know, as far as names go, I could see Daddy Libido and Sexy Mother in hip hop, because we have like Queen Latifah and Diddy, right? Like there's
Daddy Libido, I feel Sexy Mother, and but you know what, I got Sexy Red. Let me shut up. Well, yeah, both of those.
But I would love to see her interact with her parents, who are just like so much, and they love their daughter, but they like, she's made a diamond and they just want to profit off of her. And you know, like, they're in their older years now and their careers are failing a little bit, and they want Roxy back to like sparkle up their lives a little bit. I don't know, there's something very funny about all of this, and they named their daughter Roxanne. I don't know, the whole it's hilarious to me.
It's a very neat little package of a character, like Roxanne, you're made of diamond, it's a rock, like Blink, all of it. Someone had pages and pages of notes when they created the character. They just did not phone in a Black friend. That's the only thing that they should have done.
Well, and we've been, again, talking on the main show about characters who were created in the Blaxploitation era in the early 70s, like Necra and Nightshade, who definitely have a particular energy from a particular time. And for Roxy to be that character from 2005, I'm kind of in love with it a little bit, even though I'm like, oh no.
it's both reactions. It's like, ooh, I'm rocking with her, but okay. Okay, that's what we can't help our origin story. Some of us were born Daddy Libido and Sexy Mother. Some of us came from Southeast San Diego and Canto. It's not the best area. So, you know, we can't get to, that's where I'm from. But
now, it's not until a little bit later where she started to stand out a little. After M-Day, there's a limited number of students, and there were particular series that seemed to try to give some of the lesser used characters a little bit of attention on the page. One of the big ones was X-Men Legacy, which is kind of a Rogue and Magneto-led book, where a lot of the students like Indra and Mercury and Bling are being explored in a little bit more depth, because ain't nobody using these characters in other places, you know? Like, even Trance has a couple moments in this series. There's a bunch of those Academy X kids that just never get a lot of exploration, and that's kind of the only spot Bling really shows up. We see her in a couple places, like, look, mutants are getting killed everywhere, I don't have a death wish, get me the hell out of here, because the government's coming after us all the fucking time. But then they end up on Utopia instead. We see her protesting to secure mutant rights, but then Norman Osborn takes over the government. We do get to see her, she views Necra and Frenzy fighting the white ass Ms. Marvel or Moonstone from the Dark Avengers. And you almost wonder if that's where she and Necra first met. I like that we get this awful white psychiatrist lady fighting the Black women, you know, on the page. Like, they're going to kick her ass a little bit. Do you have thoughts about where Bling fit into this kind of era of extinction level threats?
I am not overly familiar with Bling's role in this.
There's not a lot. It basically
But I will say that, again, it's kind of funny. I like seeing a Black woman character sit back and be the one that's like, hey, what are we doing? Can we stop for a moment and just take stock of why we are here? This is fucking crazy.
She's the character that like is like, okay, have you guys seen a horror movie? Is walking down those stairs into the basement by yourself a good idea?
Why are we separating right now when we should definitely be staying together? We should stay. I love that character. And I think because I identify with that type of energy a whole lot. Why are we doing this? Do we want to die today? Then we need to make a different decision. And that person might be the killjoy. We're not fun in situations. Nope, we're not the wild card. We're the safety. We're the mother. Why are we here?
She gets her first big story in a four-part story called Devil at the Crossroads, which runs from X-Men Legacy Annual 1 into X-Men Legacy 228 to 230. Are you familiar with the villain M-Plate? I know you said you're an M fan.
Yes.
Tell everybody who M-Plate is.
To my knowledge, is that not Monet's brother?
Yeah, Marius St. Croix, or however you say that last name.
Yeah, you got it, St. Croix.
Do you know what his powers are or anything about him?
I know that he sucks the bone marrow out of people, and that's how he feeds himself, and I have been disgusted with this individual ever since then.
He looks like he's got like an elephant trunk covered in leather, almost like a weird gas mask. He's like a weird, creepy, vampire-y Nosferatu looking dude, but he's painted like shade, like slate gray. He like slinks in and out of our dimension, and he's like looking for food sources. And he has a little creepy dude named DOA, like Dead on Arrival, who like hangs out with him. He's like a little tiny, like creepy looking white zombie guy. It's like 2 feet tall with a big eerie grin. And he wears like a little chauffeur uniform. He's an odd villain. He just got used in Steve Fox's Dark X-Men as a member of the team, which was really fun.
The Dark X-Men, which was disgusting. That whole thing was so, I don't like horror.
He also has he has mouths in his hands, so he can like bite you from the mouth in his hand. And Monet has had this before. Monet has been changed into M-Plate before. Like she had to feed on people for a while from her mouth hands.
I hate that for her. She didn't deserve that.
Or, you know, maybe she learned something. I don't know.
Someone could put it in a book next time. We can just,
It sounds like M-Plate creeps you out just a little bit.
Terribly. The most I saw of M-Plate was in Dark X-Men. And I was disgusted every time. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm seeing more of this. No, I did not like that experience at all. And I'm
he's the first villain in Generation X. Generation X number one is M-Plate as the bad guy. And there's something interesting about him. This is when this guy approaches and the X-Men are rushing into combat, Roxy Washington is standing back and going, oh, hell no. No, there's no way I'm fighting this guy.
Yeah, big energy.
If Daddy Libido and Sexy Mother taught me anything, it's not to
survive in these streets.
But in this, M-Plate is attacking Utopia. He's looking for sustenance. Bling is hanging out on the beach with her friends. She says, quote, you know, guys, the legend of your dumbness has spread far and wide, but something tells me that this will be the day that lives on when you're both dead. She's hanging out with her friends. She's always got a lot. She says, testosterone breaks me out in hives. It's like an allergy, which is a perfect thing for a lesbian to say, especially. And then she ends up getting kidnapped by M-Plate and DOA. She can literally fire diamonds out of her body, which is crazy. I don't know if they just like pop through the skin like Marrow's bones do.
I always kind of wonder, like, does it heal back up or does, I don't know.
Yeah, because they're made out of her bone marrow, right? Do you know Marrow, the character? Like her bones grow through her skin and she like breaks them off and uses them as swords and they just constantly grow. There's a bunch of gross scenes from the 90s where she like has forehead protrusions. She like pops it off and sets it down and then she keeps eating and then another one grows and she pops it off. Like it's gross.
Over here making faces.
You don't like body horror much, do you?
I do not. I'm learning that about myself. And not just like don't like it. I'm over here twitching and having reactions that the audience can't see.
So Bling has like magic diamond bone marrow that like fires out of her. And this is what M-Plate's trying to feed on, because the only person who's ever been able to feed him at any length is the character Penance.
Yeah.
Who was M sometimes, because M can turn into the Penance form, but at first it was her two little sisters combined into a Penance form. The St. Croix family is crazy. It's
very crazy. Worse than the summer sleep.
So Bling is captured by the creepy elephant vampire. She's stuck in another dimension and she's being fed on. And this is her first big storyline. It is not her favorite day. And she has nightmares about this for a long time afterward. The X-Men stage a rescue mission. She's pretty resilient. Like she fights back a lot and she ends up ripping him in two once. And when she's back on Earth, she says, having Rogue come riding to the rescue and sweep me up in her womanly arms, kind of hot. And Trance goes, God, you are such a slut. Trance is Hope Abbott, who's a little white girl who has like an astral form, and I don't know, cracks me up. Do you enjoy this interchange?
I love it. I love it. And I think that's big X-Men energy. She's worried about not fitting in. Girl, they all hoes. They all sluts. You right along with.
And then we get maybe the most profound thing she ever says right after this. She's talking about having been captured by M-Plate, and she goes, it reminds her of her parents' parties when she was a kid. She says, you knew anything could happen and not in a good way. And that's really that kind of the only reference to her background we ever see her speak out loud. That's
it makes me sad. And I would actually love for a writer, if they were ever to explore more of Bling and her backstory, I would like to see that fleshed out, because it could be really interesting. I should also say, as a Warner, have you ever heard of the show Empire?
Mm-hmm.
I love Empire. I don't care what people say about that show. So I think that it could be very interesting, especially putting it in the Marvel comic universe, seeing what her childhood was like, because you're so close to like fame and fortune. You're in these music videos. You're close to danger. You're dealing with kidnappers and things like that. But your parents still have you at these parties. They're still exposing you to these things. That could, and especially just in recent hip hop news, what we've learned about some of the people we've known for decades, that would be a very timely and interesting way of writing that from a child's perspective, growing up in that type of environment, now having to deal with being a mutant. I think that I would love to see that explored a little bit.
Do you think Bling's mother would be played by Taraji P. Henson?
Sexy mother. I hope so. That's the only, I only see Cookie Lion now, as a matter of fact. I don't know if Lucius is giving daddy libido, but
Now Bling's present for a lot of stuff, but really just in the crowd scenes. She helps fight off the kids in Necrotia, like the dead mutants who are attacking, and this is where Onyx gets killed, which is one of her friends. Onyx is a weird character. We'll talk about him another time. He's a weird big rock dude who like tries to rape Mystique once and then gets killed with a touch. He's odd.
Then Onyx can go.
Maybe it was rape. He like throws a giant fit. I'd have to go back and look again. Weird character anyway. She fights vampires, she fights Nimrods. She's in a class called Coping with Physical Changes. She's annoyed with like Kid Omega one time. Then you referenced that time when she is in kind of a love triad in this like X-Men Volume 4, where it's like some like all the girls. Bling is used a little bit. She has a thing, there's like a storyline that builds over a little while where she's like fighting with Mercury. And we find out that she tried to like flirt with Mercury, but Mercury didn't like her back, and now they're acting weird. She also builds the little thing for Shogo, like the little device that keeps him protected. Do you know much about Mercury? This is Cecily Kincaid, who is a character made of living metal, basically.
From her interactions with Roxy, so very little I know.
Mercury is used in one storyline where some villains capture her and like take her skin and use it to build those creepy Predator X monsters. That's her most unfortunate storyline, but she doesn't have a lot of exploration in the comics.
My girl needs a win then. That's terrible.
And they end up together at the end of this story. And this is where like Archaea's sentinels are going. She's super annoyed with Kid Omega through all of this. We get an interchange between Mercury and her. Mercury says, "So you really filed a complaint with Ms. Monroe about me?" And Bling says, "You punched me in the face in front of everyone. You embarrassed me. Look at me. I'm ugly. My skin, like, hard and potentially dangerous. Plus, I'm the only lesbian at the school. I'm lonely, Cecily. I don't know. I thought you might understand." And Mercury says, "So let's go out, Roxy. But just talk to me. Ask me like human being. I don't know. Weird, creepy notes left at my door. What's up with that? The Jean Grey school is already full of gossip, drama, and weirdos. Let's just be cool to each other, okay? And shut up. You aren't ugly." So Bling has very little chill when it comes to the way she's flirting with other girls, because she also has the thing where she's flirting with Jubilee earlier too.
Yeah.
Jubilee's nice to her and she's like, "Oh," and then she kisses her.
Yeah. And I think that I don't like it. I actually hate when characters do that, because it immediately puts me in the, "Oh, you didn't have consent." I don't like it. But I think for a young person exploring different relationships and trying to figure out what their place is, and even feeling comfortable in their own skin, which Roxy does not. I'm not saying that it's okay ever to like push yourself on somebody. I'm saying it makes a little bit of sense for impulsive decisions to be made amongst teenagers given those circumstances. I personally hate seeing whenever a character, a surprise kiss every time. I'm just like, no, never. I don't know why.
So if we read, and we really have to read between the lines to find this storyline, but if she had an unhappy childhood with parents who were inattentive and having crazy parties, she goes to this school and finds out it is not what it was cracked up to be. And she didn't fit into the human world as a black girl made of diamonds. And now she doesn't fit in with the X-Men either. But also she's gay and there's no other gay girls. And like, who does she flirt with? And what does she do? And you know, we get the idea she's like maybe 15. Like she's figuring her shit out a little bit. I'm a little more understanding in that capacity.
I get all the reasons behind it. It's just always like ugh, why did you do that? Like, why? And then to Jubilee, you're gonna go for the vampire single mom. Like,
But Jubilee paid attention to her. I do identify as gay, and anyone in my adolescence, particularly when I was closeted, that was actually nice to me, of course I'm gonna crush on them, especially if they're cute. I gotta get it. It's Jubilee.
I too would have a crush on Jubilee. You got me.
But also,
there.
Don't kiss your teachers.
That me a little. I'm like, oh, that is bold. I don't. And then I realize I have to turn my brain off a little bit and just read the comics, and that might fall into that category a little bit.
It's a little teen drama. I'm glad she got a moment on the page at the very least. And then she gets a featured role in Christina Strain's Generation X Volume 2, which only ran for 9 issues. This is an interesting series because it focuses on a lot of characters that you don't normally get to see, and it's a hugely queer cast. I would love to interview Christina Strain. I've never reached out to her, but I would love it. She chooses Kid Omega, Morph, not the one from the cartoons, but a very interesting kind of shape-shifty character who like takes on the forms of others. A character named Hindsight, who's even more obscure. Eyeboy, Nature Girl are here, and Bling. And it's a kind of going on some misadventures, but it's mostly about just like teen high school drama a little bit. And Bling gets some really cute moments throughout this series. Have you read Generation X Volume 2 before?
Not, but I enjoyed reading your summary of it, and especially her Hulk out moment to protect the janitor. Can you tell me more about that moment?
Yes, yeah. This series is interesting because it picks up some really obscure threads and some like really obscure characters who don't ever get any focus. There's a janitor named Andre who is featured in a book, I think it's called Wolverine Saudade, who comes back here. He's a black character who's very quiet, and he's kind of in the background. And when some students are bullying Andre, she does like a diamond flare up, like shoots all her diamonds out and like makes herself bulk up, kind of like Iceman with ice, where she's like diamonds on her shoulders, like she can like make herself bulk out, which is a crazy cool use of her powers, which we've never seen again so far as I know. And she defends the guy that's being bullied. It's a black character who's kind of, you almost get the vibe that he's a little slow. It's hard for him to stand up for himself. And he gets a few little moments with like Hindsight and Morph in this, who are a couple of queer characters. I think you would enjoy this volume. It's very, I don't know, the right, like Gilmore Girls energy. That's not the right energy, but it's very teen drama. It's not action packed like a lot of X-Men books. It's just very like character introspective.
Okay. Would it be kind of not slice of life exactly, but
a little bit slice of life. Okay. And it takes its time. It's not in a hurry to go anywhere, but that's also why it was canceled after 9 issues, you know, like it people didn't latch on to it as much as they could have.
Definitely check that out.
Yeah. And the art's really interesting too. I enjoy it. I think it's good. Bling here decides she wants to join the X-Men. So she now has a goal, and she wants to be on Chambers' team instead of Jubilee because she feels like Chambers is going to give her a better chance at making the big leagues. There's a character named Face that attacks and they go after him. What do you think of Roxy's kind of shift here? Like, all right, if I got to live here, let's work on actually being a superhero.
I think that it makes sense. I think that she has no place in the human world. She's not going to be able to blend in. And it's one of those, if I'm here with the X-Men, I've kind of had moments with them already, I might as well lock it in and be part of the team. And I think it makes a lot of sense, especially because she's had her experience with M-Plate at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely understand wanting to be on somebody's team where she gets to have more superhero training. Like, if I'm going to be in danger living amongst mutants, let me be able to defend myself. I think that tracks, and I think that's a good progression of a character.
Now, we have M-Plate, E-M-P-L-A-T-E, but when Monet gets the vampire hands, she goes by M-Plate, which is M-PLATE, which is ridiculous. So Monet as M-Plate attacks the school and tries to feed on Roxy, who does not handle it super well. Like, this is a trauma moment for her. At the start of Gen X number 4, though, we get a little bit of insight into her talking about her powers manifesting. Do you want to read that blurb for us?
Yes. A few years ago, I woke up in the middle of the night freezing. I tried rubbing my arms to warm up, but it didn't help because my skin wasn't skin anymore, and it hasn't been since.
And shortly after that, she opens up to Chamber about, like, I don't want to live among humans because how will people react to me stuck in this form all the time? We then go to Gen X number 8, and she gets sent to therapy with Husk. This is wild to me. Let's send the black girl to the white southern, like, sister of Cannonball for therapy. Are you a Husk fan?
I'm not a Husk fan.
Well, and Husk is also completely passing. Husk can blend in as a white woman anytime she wants, even though she can change her body into other forms. Husk as her therapist is a weird, weird choice. But she gets to go see this white woman from Kentucky for therapy. She gets a couple of hero moments. There's a Krakoa incident. She ends up opening up to Husk. The series gets renumbered back to the original version of Gen X. So this is in Generation X number 85. And she opens up to Husk a little bit more about why she chose to come to Xavier's school. Again, do you want to give us this blurb?
I just wanted to feel normal again, like I did before my mutation, before people stared, to know that I've ever said that out loud before. Because being normal here means wanting to be an X-Men. And I know I'm the perfect candidate to become one, but it's dangerous. Endplate showed me that firsthand. And maybe I had the choice to blend in. I wouldn't be so scared to ask myself if it's worth risking my life just to stay here and feel normal. If I don't, I'm a mess.
I like that we get some vision into her interior world a little bit. And like, it's a body acceptance storyline. What are your thoughts on this? This character dealing with her diamond form. We've seen her deal with her trauma slightly and her sexuality slightly, but this is her dealing with being a person made of diamond, which is crazy.
Yeah, I feel like she's in a tough position because, you know, like we mentioned earlier, she doesn't get to go back and blend. If it was just living amongst humans and being safe and fine, I think that's one thing. You just look different. And people that look different, even in the real world, have to contend with that, or they just have to deal with that the best they can, kind of no matter what their body differences may be. But mutants also face danger just for existing, even if they're not a danger to anyone. She is also a Black woman who is also queer. So she has all of these identities that people want to hurt her for, simply for existing. Or she can be with the X-Men where she's around people that definitely understand that side of it, being a mutant, but you are in danger being an X-Men. You are putting your life on the line every day. You have to, even if you're not actively going out, sometimes the danger just comes to you. It comes knocking on your door. So you're out here fighting for your life anyway. I think it's really natural to be confused about that. And why was I given this lot in life? Yeah, that's a lot. I think that giving us that insight to how she's thinking and how she's processing that is a good move for her character.
Yeah, and I work as a trauma therapist. It's always really interesting to see stuff like this brought up in comic book format. Again, it's the Thing story in that, why do I have to be a monster, where Johnny gets to be the blonde kid who turns on fire, you know? There's an element of, I didn't ask for this, but also the world's not going to let me exist and I have to fight and live life on my own terms, or I cave in on myself. Like, what's my choice? I didn't pick this, but I got to learn how to love me anyway. And I don't necessarily want to see that overemphasized for this character, but I do enjoy it. And, you know, after being afraid, she does, before Generation X Volume 2 ends, she does fight back against M, and then chooses to, like, leave the school to go live life on her own for a little while. That doesn't last very long. We don't really know what happened, but it does give her a story. We didn't really have any stories for her before, you know?
I will say that, you know, as a Black person, as a Black woman, it gets kind of exhausting sometimes in media because they love to tell Black trauma stories and they like to have Black people. And I can only speak from the perspective of a Black woman. It seems our trauma sells more than our joy does. So on one hand, it is kind of just like, oh man, I don't want to see a character have to exist that way. They should get slice of life moments and be able to explore their love and stories and things like that. But the reality is, like, we don't exist without that reality as well, about being queer. I also identify as queer. About being queer and being Black and being a woman and then being a mutant on top of that. I don't think that you can have realistic stories about characters that carry all of those different plates without addressing it. So I'm with you where I don't want to go too much into it. I don't want that to become the thing with this character, unpacking the trauma or dealing with things that are really hard. But I don't want it to be ignored either, because it's a reality, even in this very fantastical setting.
Hold that thought for a moment. I want to come back to this in just a second. Bling does show up in a bunch of just one-shot spaces in as parts of crowds. She fights the poisons in Venomized. She's in another like body support group in a Domino annual written by Leah Williams. It's actually really fun, but Bling doesn't really do much except sit in the crowd. She's part of like the Age of X-Men with Nate Gray. She fights Apoth after they're on Krakoa. And we also get a moment with her in Black Panther, where she's part of a group of all Black superheroes fighting like the evil Wakandan space empire. She shows up in the Pride special in a team, in and a group shot full of gay heroes. But her place on Krakoa has been really interesting. And I'd love for you to pull the narrative you were just sharing about being a Black queer person. She doesn't look traditionally Black in that she's made of diamond, right? But she's formed this alliance with Necra, who is an albino white woman who is like a voodoo queen hate priestess who like draws on hate and like makes herself stronger, who's an American woman. And she's also partnered with Oya, or Idie Okonkwo, who's a very young African mutant who had a very, very tragic upbringing. And these are the three under Victor Laval on Krakoa who kind of band together. They form a place called Nanny's Cove, which is named after a famous Black woman who led a slave uprising historically many years ago. You guys can look that up. Bling builds a ship and they are figuring out their life. But then Necra and Oya get sent to the pit because they killed some men who came to Krakoa. And like, it's very unjust. Necra and Oya then get explored a lot because they are part of Victor Laval's Exiles group that is in Sabretooth and the Wolverine books. But Bling kind of just gets off to the side, but she is one of the ones that helps rescue them from the pit. She's also a character who gets featured because she's one of the ones up for the X-Men vote. Do you remember the X-Men voting a few years ago?
I do, for the Hellfire, revealed at the Hellfire Gala.
Did you vote for Bling?
I did not vote. at all, to be fair.
I didn't vote for Bling either. I'm more fond of her now after we talk about her, but I like a villain story. Both the Hellfire votes, or all the votes, I voted for like the bad guy character because I always think those redemptive stories are really fun.
I look at it and I'm like, oh, this is very interesting. I want to participate, and then I don't participate. And then I just wait for the next time for that to happen again.
They line her up a little bit when they're talking about her as like she could be a scientific replacement for Forge on the team. Like she has ideas for what the team could do. This is like the X-Men national heroes who are like living in the treehouse. We get the moment where she learns she did not get the vote. Do you have thoughts about what Bling would have been like maybe had she won and was part of this like national team of superheroes?
I would have loved to see that. I think anytime we're putting a Black woman in the mix, I'm with it. That's just me. I'm okay that she didn't though. I wasn't necessarily attached to her character getting in or not, so I'm very neutral on the outcome. I think that as they've expanded on her character over the years, it would have been interesting to see her in a lineup like that.
She gets a very brief like diamond dress design. Hellfire Gale is all about like using your powers for fashion, which is fun. She has a moment with armor. They're like, oh, I guess we split the youth vote. Well, that sucks. And then Firestar wins. It's another white woman. First Polaris won, and then Firestar won, and then Juggernaut won. It was, they tried. And then in X-Men Unlimited comic, this is the online Marvel app comic, 55 or 50 through 55. We get a few moments with her after she loses the vote, and she and Mercury are still dating, but they're having some issues, and they all join together to battle the Typhon group. This is all the characters who didn't win the vote. She doesn't have a lot to do, but again, it's fun to see her on the page. Any thoughts on Bling on Krakoa or her connections to Necra and Oya?
Nothing that jumps out at me, maybe because it wasn't a main storyline for her as far as character development. I think that anytime you have someone sent to the pit and just kind of unraveling the idealism of Krakoa versus what it actually was, that's always going to be very interesting, especially yeah. Very idealized paradise. So that sucks. Your friends go down for essentially what they feel is protecting this paradise of theirs. But I don't really have much thoughts on it beyond that.
Now, just a couple weeks ago, we got X-Men The Wedding Special, which is Mystique and Destiny renewing their vows. There's a story written by Tate Bromble, who I've had on the show. Tate's a great guy, who is a queer writer. And there are some young students who are trying to get the perfect wedding gift for Mystique. Did you see this issue? Have you read it?
Oh, I'm very behind on some of the comics.
Yeah, so there's a lot.
After Krakoa, I got kind of sad. I'm just like, I slowed down a whole bunch. So
it's Bling and Pixie and Anol and Indra, and I think there's one more character. And Bling's idea is like, let's go to the Savage Land, we'll create a mutant circuit, we'll use all our powers together to make the perfect gift. And she like generates some diamond and everybody puts their powers in it, but Pixie's power is like pixie dust. It's like hallucinogenics, and anyone who touches this diamond ends up like seeing shit. It doesn't go great. But the funniest moment is Bling, she gets a couple cute little speeches, but they're at the very last page. She's sitting next to Pixie and she goes, so just so you know, Mercury and I are open. And Pixie's like, what does that mean? It's a cute little moment for her. And that's kind of the last we've seen her. We don't know where she's going to end up post-Krakoa. It's a cute story, though. It was fun to see her featured with this group.
I read that through. I intend to, so I look forward to seeing that story. And I wonder if they're going to have her kind of in the background of these new From the Ashes stories that are popping up before maybe moving her more towards the center again. Is she going to pop up anywhere?
You know, one of the cool things about Krakoa is because all the mutants were living there, it was really easy to show anyone in any backup scene anytime, you know? And I think in a post-Krakoa world, we have a lot of writers who are working very closely together. I've befriended some of them who are going to use the characters where they fit best. I don't know where Bling is going to end up or even if we will see her for years. It's an interesting thing to kind of consider. But, you know, hopefully wherever they show up, she gets some really cool moments of like learning how to shine, because there's a lot of pieces that put her together. Really quickly, I pulled this up. She's sitting next to Pixie at the table and she goes, hey, Pix, you know, me and Mercury are open, right? And Pixie, who's British, says, like, for business? Is this an X-Corp thing? So she's a little daffy. She didn't know what she meant, which is really cute. Bling is the trauma survivor. We have her mutant powers developing. We have her exasperation with Xavier's school. We have the M-plate stuff. We have the science stuff. We have her decision to be a hero. And then we have her, like, trying out for the X-Men. And that's kind of her storylines all mixed up together. It's fun to analyze a character that doesn't give a lot of thought, and you end up kind of feeling a particular way. How are you feeling, Tiffy Starchild?
And her body acceptance journey, it's actually kind of funny, because I told you that the very first time I saw her was that scene with Jubilee and Shogo and Armor when she was making that thing for them. And I was very confused about her character design, even at that point. Learning a lot more about her and her struggle, particularly with her physical look, I'm so much more endeared to her. This is going to be such a weird sentence. I love a trauma girl. No, because I myself identify with having to work through a lot of trauma. And I know that a lot of X-Men characters aren't strangers to that. But over the years, even though she hasn't gotten to be the center stage or the main character a lot, just the growth that she's been given and her coming to acceptance with being a mutant and trying her hand out in the human world and wanting to better herself as an X-Men specifically. I like her. I do hope that we get to see her. And even if they do have to move her from the background eventually to the forefront, I hope that it's not years before we get to see her again. But I loved this deep dive so much. I want to go back and read the things that I have not with her, so that I can catch up on the fun since 2005. And yeah, I hope that we get to see her again, because she seems really dope.
By the way, if we open up your dating profile, it's like looking for trauma girls.
Yeah, right. I can fix you. No. Tie together.
The therapist in me, my alarms are like, no, oh, don't do that.
it's all for jokes. It's all for funny.
No, I know, I'm teasing. The interesting thing, if we take this to an operative space, and we'll close here, is if you're going to pick Bling, she's not going to be a person who gets a solo book. She's going to be part of a team, and you got to put her in a category with other characters who are kind of like her, which means you'd have to find some really interesting ways to use her powers. Because if she's the girl that can shoot diamonds, that's an interesting power set to use on a team. But we have seen her bulk up. I could see some cool stuff, like, can she create, like, diamond claws, like Wolverine's claws? Can she become kind of a more scrappy fighter? Can she create stuff out of diamond like Iceman might, and like create walls? Is there a way to use her power set in creative ways that makes her more of an interesting visual force for the team? Can we treat her like Iceman or Marrow or Wolverine and kind of amp her up that way a little bit? And then she's the cool science queer black girl who can do crazy cool shit with her diamond powers, you know? That's an interesting bend for me. And I feel like a writer would have to do something like that to make her a fan favorite. Do you have any thoughts there on the diamond powers?
You know, well, it's actually interesting, because I always view things just as a fan and just as someone that just loves these characters and loves these comic books and in the different media. And I've never thought about it from that perspective of how they have to work cohesively together as a team, and even visually, how is it going to make this character more popular with the public? Because that's what drives the decisions sometimes. I've never viewed it from that standpoint, and you've kind of opened up my world a little bit. I think that I think that what you described would be great. Seeing her form the diamond a different way, how strong does it make her? Can she break things down with it? Can she be like the Hulk? If diamonds are like the strongest material in the world, the strongest mineral or whatever, how does that play out for someone?
More like some more superhero energy behind her a little bit. Like I'm writing a one shot for Marvel, and I get to pick up a team to amp up. And when she shows up on the page, she's already in that form. She's amped up. She's bulked up. She's got the Wolverine diamond claws. She's sassy and she's slashing at shit and she's shooting people in the face with her diamonds. And she's like a really effective superhero. And then if we get some time, she goes home to visit her mom and dad, and we get to see what that home life was like. She's got a girlfriend and maybe another on the side. She's got her science shed. I think there's some really interesting things that could be explored. She just needs like an amp up. I also don't love her code name. I feel like, I don't know, Diamond Heart seems too ridiculous, but like a different type of code name. I feel like Bling is so dated. It's almost hard.
Yeah.
When you're writing it out, you're like Wolverine, comma, Cannonball, comma, Bling, exclamation point, comma, and Nightcrawler. Like it's something very odd about her name.
Oh, I agree. But I also agree. I would be the worst one for trying to choose a code name for somebody. So if it was diamond related, okay, so Bling, Diamond. See, mine was dumb. I was just like, Sparkle. That's a stupid name for a mutant superhero. Don't ask me, man. I can't.
Sparkle and Dazzler adventure together. You know, maybe she could honor her mother and just go into combat as sexy mother.
I want to end this interaction now. Let's wrap. No.
But I think if we were going to make her happen, we'd have to do those things. I think there'd have to be a code name change and an amp up. But I think she has significant potential. She's interesting.
I agree.
I love these conversations. I love making new friends, but I will forever associate this character with you now. Tiffy, it's wonderful to meet you. Tell everybody where they can find you online, if you have any final thoughts, and is there anything you want to plug? We're going to put this out on the Patreon on July 31st.
So it's like talking to people in the future. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok. I also stream on Twitch. It's all the same Tiffy Starchild. And yeah, I guess the only thing to plug, since we love X-Men here, on my Discord, I host a Saturday morning watch party every Saturday, and the vibe is super casual. It's literally just to watch cartoons like we did as kids. No one has their camera on. We used to start off with cameras. Nah, we're not getting dressed. No one has cameras on anymore. We did all of X-Men 97 when that was going, and then now we're going back and doing X-Men Evolution. So we're just working our way through the different X-Men cartoons, and it's an open invitation if y'all would like to come through. The links to my Discord are, you can find them anywhere I am existing on the internet. But yeah, that's it.
You are just a fucking delight. It's so great to meet you. I'm so happy to have just your name and like you're on my camera. This is fun. I'm a huge fan, and like I hope we can be friends because you're great.
Okay, so
I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. Tiffy, you're welcome to add me. Just ask. I will be in San Diego. I will be at FlameCon in New York, and then I will be at the Uncanny Experience in September. So watch. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Tiffy. We'll see you back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel.